Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. And if you want to know about the church in the news, there's just one place to go, and you all know where it is. It's Al Cresta, but we don't have Al Cresta here with us, so we'll do the best we can. And we've got a regular from a visitor to Al Cresta's show, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, here with us. And Church in the News means if you've got a question about what you're hearing about the church, that's what Dr. Bunsen does. He reports on and comments on and knows what's going on. And all the various things happening in the church. So I'm sure we'll talk about the synod on synodality. We'll maybe talk about some of the writing from Pope Francis. But first, let me welcome Dr. Matthew Bunsen. Middle of the night in Rome. Thanks for being here with us.
Yes, which is why I'm not wearing a tie. It would be kind of ridiculous to wear one this early in the morning.
Yes. Well, I'm glad to hear that you've excused yourself from the tie. Yeah, good for you. Well, I did hear you.
It really is.
It's good to be in Rome. Is that what you said?
No, it's really great to be with you.
Oh, I thought you said to be in Rome. Okay. Well, thank you. I'm glad to have you with us. But I heard you a little while ago talking with Al Cresta, and yeah. I have to apologize. I can't do an interview like Al Cresta does, but I'll do what I can. Nobody can. That's true. But my guess is the whole purpose for your being in Rome at this particular moment is that everybody else is in Rome at this particular moment. We got the Synod on Synodality sessions, which have they concluded or they're about to conclude for this year?
No, we have another full week.
Oh, you have another full week. Okay.
We do. Then everything will conclude on the 29th of October with the concluding mass for this session. So this first edition of the Synod on Synodality, which is officially the 16th Ordinary General Assembly of the Synod of Bishops on the theme of the Synod of Synodality, and I won't ask anyone to try to repeat that.
Wow.
Started on the 4th of October and will conclude on the 29th, but let's remember this has been a two-year process leading up to this, and then we have another full year ahead of us, concluding with the second session of this same Synod, again, 16th Ordinary, next October. So there's a lot of road ahead of us.
So I kind of know the stages. You know, there was the kind of diocesan level, the national level. Now we've got, but I don't know what the next year is supposed to do. I assume we'll continue praying for the synod, but there's nothing else I'm supposed to be doing, right? My job is over. They don't need me for anything.
No, I expect there's going to be more to come. You're absolutely right. This has been a two-year process that Pope Francis, he first announced it really at the end of the Amazonian Synod in 2019. I know because I was actually here in Rome for that. And he announced that the theme going forward is going to be on synodality, which really from about 2015 forward has been one of the keys to this pontificate, especially from his marking of the 50th anniversary of the Second Vatican Council's conclusion, where he had what I think is a hallmark, landmark speech on his vision for synodality. It started really in 2021 in the practical sense with, as you noted, a variety of phases. So we had the parish phase, was related to diocesan phase. Then that moved to the national phase, then the continental phase. Oh, yeah. And now we are here in Rome for this synod. But you're asking a really important question, and that is what lies ahead for the next year?
Right.
And we got a bit of a sign of it. And we can talk more about this going forward tonight. But we got a bit of a preview from the Relator General. I know that's a technical term. Cardinal Jean-Claude Hollerich of Luxembourg, who is tasked by Pope Francis to serve as the shepherd in a way. He guides this process. Usually a cardinal is appointed for individual synods, and he's the one who's been chosen for this. And he has spoken extensively on the process of synodality, but he gave a bit of a preview this last Wednesday on what might lie ahead for us.
And so the preview said, I guess that there's probably a ton of material that comes out of these weeks that will have to be reflected on, collated, organized into the what will be the beginnings of next year's work. But is all that work going to be done in Rome, or is
well, at the, it, again, great questions.
You're
right.
Okay.
There's a lot of material that we've seen already, partly because of what is public. Now, there's been a lot of not secrecy, but confidentiality. And most of what's happened in this Senate has taken place behind closed doors with very few official statements. Two key elements that we've seen, however, are these general congregations, which are sort of the speeches to the participants in the Senate hall. And then we have press briefings. Cardinal Hollerich used his speech the other day on Wednesday, launching the last of these phases of discussions here. And he talked about that when the Synod participants go home to their diocese, remember this is cardinals, archbishops, bishops, lay people for the first time in real significance, men and women religious, he said there are going to be two tasks. The first is to work to communicate the work here. And then the other is to really begin, and he used a couple of phrases of like paths of experimentation and deep study.
Okay.
We'll know more at the end of next week because the participants are going to be voting on what is called the synthesis document. Essentially, it's pulling together all of the discussions, not making any conclusions or recommendations yet, but basically pulling together all of the things that they've talked about. And they're certainly having controversial topics. That will then serve as the springboard for what we expect will be a series of marching orders, so to speak, or homework, not just for the participants, but for every Catholic and all the bishops around the world. So there's much yet to be discussed and much yet to be revealed. So right now, we don't have a lot of clarity.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Okay. So there's still a lot of work to be done, a lot of people still to be listened to, all of that. But,
yes.
But in the end, will we get something that, you know, talks about broadly about the church and like a council does, church in the modern world, or will it be on how to live the church synodally, which is something that, do you see what I'm saying? Because it's called the Synod on Synodality. So in the end, are we expecting something that will be about, here's what synodality looks like going forward, or will we get something other than that?
Well, I guess it depends on what you mean by in the end.
Oh, yeah, right.
And what I mean by that is that this is the first phase.
Yeah.
So I think we can certainly anticipate a document. Now, let's remember that this summary document still has to be voted on by all of the members. And it has to pass by a two-thirds majority of all the members to be fully approved.
Oh.
So there is a possibility that if there is wide unhappiness in the Senate hall and there are sufficient numbers, they could actually vote it down. Now, I suspect, as we've seen in previous Senates, but this one admittedly is very different, usually they don't get to that point where that's a concern because they're able to reach a certain consensus. The difficulty this time, though, is that apparently, and this may change, they're not voting sort of point by point by point, which is traditional with synods. It's going to be a straight up and down vote on the document. So I suspect what will happen is the participants will be listening to this, especially from Friday, above all Saturday, where they're going to have everything read to them, and then there will be hours of discussion on what they've heard. Again, this is a summary pulling together everything that's been talked about. And they will be asked a simple question. Does this summary accurately reflect the discussions that took place here? Now, that means that that will include likely the hot button issues of pastoral care for LGBTQ people. The question, the vex question that we've seen raised here repeatedly this week about the female diaconate.
All right.
Some have even raised the specter of ordination of women to the priesthood, very controversial, even in the Synod hall, and the structures in the church. The question will be not so much, I think, do you agree with these positions? Not that they're going to be advancing or making suggestions on this, but was this actually accurately discussed?
Yeah.
That's probably the way they'll reach some sort of a supermajority.
Now, I can hear that when you say that, but I can't imagine that the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or any secular, they're going to get that distinction. Because you could see someone like, I don't know, a cardinal from somewhere or something voting yes on the document, and that immediately being interpreted interpreted as this cardinal or this bishop or whatever is approving of what's said in the document, but that's not what they're being asked. They're just being asked, does this reflect what was actually discussed?
Right. That seems to be where this is headed. Now, again, we have a week yet, and we don't know what this final document is going to look like.
Right.
We know, for example, there have been some changes made in the schedule of the Synod just in the last few days in order to accommodate a greater opportunity for the participants to speak about what's in this proposed summary. So there's a lot yet to happen, and I think we may end up with editing along the way. But you're also absolutely right that we also have to prepare for the fact that many in secular media, and I would guess a lot of progressive Catholic media that's out there, will take any document that comes out of this and say, for example, Church Synod on Synodality approves further discussion of the ordination of women.
Yeah, right. When
which
that's right, not
which isn't right, exactly. Right. So there's going to be misinformation in exactly the same way. Two things have happened over the last several years. The first is there's a genuine and understandable misunderstanding or a lack of clarity as to what we mean by synodality.
Yeah.
There has been, I think, some very deliberate misrepresentation in secular media and again in some corners of Catholic media as to what this synod is actually supposed to accomplish.
Well, let me, if I may, before I have to take the break, just to ask you about, I mean, you said progressive Catholic media, but it strikes me that this is also an opportunity for some of the more fevery things on the right side to accuse people of doing things that they didn't do at the, do you see what I'm saying? By saying, well,
yes,
you voted to approve this document, and it's not going to mean that they voted to approve women's ordination, but that's how it might get portrayed in some of those places.
Yeah, I agree. You're absolutely right that there are those who have high levels of anxiety about what's happening here in Rome, in Vatican City right now. And that was addressed and has been addressed repeatedly by the organizers of the Synod. I can think, for example, of Cardinal Mario Grech, who's the cardinal in charge of the Synod of Bishops itself, the entire organization, so to speak, was appointed by Pope Francis, saying on a number of occasions that the goal of this, and he's quoting Pope Francis, is not to change church teaching. But the challenge becomes when you allow the type of discussion that they've had in the Synod hall, where issues like this are raised by some of the participants, there is this image out there or this perception out there that this, that everything is up for grabs.
Yeah, right.
And that's a risk, I think, that as we have seen before, Pope Francis is willing to take in pursuit of his vision of synodality for the church. And we have seen it play out in other synods. I go back to the Amazonian Synod, where the final document actually proposed the viri probati, or ordaining seasoned men, married men, and raised also the question of potentially female deacons. That was handed to Pope Francis, and he did absolutely nothing with it. In fact, he rejected both notions, basically left behind the final report from the Synod on the Amazon, and wrote his own apostolic exhortation in exactly the way that he wanted. It's called Querida Amazonia.
Yeah.
And it was a much more reflection of what he had done previously in Aparecida all the way back in 2007 for the evangelization of South America. So Francis knows what he wants, and we'll see what follows from that.
But he doesn't seem to have a fear of opening the box, let everybody have their... He doesn't seem to be controlling the process, maybe because...
Right.
I mean, maybe there's a certain self-confidence in that of, I'm still the Pope. I mean, I do get the final word on this. But also maybe some confidence that the Holy Spirit will, you know... doesn't need that kind of control, you know, can still, and maybe even better, accomplish tasks if you just let everybody have their say and then move forward after that.
That's been the hallmark of these synods under Pope Francis in particular, that he likes a free flow of discussion and a free flow of ideas. And some people find it very worrisome. Francis trusts, and at the end of the day, as we have seen consistently, Francis, as Pope, as is his right, has the final word.
Yeah.
Bishop Daniel Flores of Brownsville, Texas, is here. He's very well-known theologian in his own right. He's a brilliant Thomist. He's also the president of the Episcopal Conference here in USCCB's Doctrine Committee and part of the small committee that's been formulating a lot of the work here for the Synod on Synodality. At a press conference that I attended just yesterday, he talked about the fact that when he was asked, because there are these anxieties about all of this, that he said all he has heard in the Synod Hall is faithful Catholics talking to each other. But then he added the important qualifier, sub tutela Petri, in other words, under the care of Peter.
Oh.
And he stressed that from that sense, he is not personally worried that somehow the hierarchical structure of the church is in danger from these discussions.
Well, he's not listening to enough podcasts then. Clearly, he needs to listen to some.
Or visiting enough sites. Yeah,
yeah, right. He needs to visit more websites. All right. Dr. Matthew Bunsen is our guest. We're talking about the Synod right now, but we don't have to stay on the Synod. If there's other news that you'd like to talk about the church in the news, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. I'll be right back with more Dr. Matthew Bunsen on Catholic Answers Live.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at Catholic.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
Human beings are God's greatest masterpiece. Every person is made in the image and likeness of God. But every saint, that is, every person who accepts God's invitation, his upward call to make them holy. And so every story presents us with a unique masterpiece that God is writing.
The Journey Home, Monday night, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Radio and Television.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Dr. Matthew Bunsen is our guest. He's over in Rome participating in all the conversations going on over there and the reporting going on over there regarding the Synod on Synodality. If you have questions in that regard, you're very welcome to call 888-318-7884. But if you want to talk about any other aspect of the church in the news, you're very welcome to do that as well. 888-318-7884. All right, I'm trying to, I honestly do think a lot of people are struggling with the word synodality, because what seems to be being proposed is that the church should be a more synodal church, to which I say, fine, what is that? I don't know what a more synodal church is. And maybe that's where the Pope is going to get us to in his final document, is explaining this is what, you know, maybe he wants to. It's another one of those kind of the Francis technique of let it all fly out and then clarification will come after. But what is a synodal church? Is it, in what way is it different than the church we've got now? Oh, we got
right. There's been.
Oh, sorry. We had you on mute there for a second. So what? Go ahead. If you'll start again. Sorry. Our fault.
Yeah, no, you're asking what I think is a really important question. And that is that from the start, there's been a challenge to define exactly what synodality is. And we go back to, like I was mentioning in the start of our conversation, in 2015, Pope Francis marked the 50th anniversary of the Second Vatican Council by really delving into his vision for synodality for the church. And his perception of it, his vision of it, is from Synhodos, as been explicated quite a few times over the last years, of journeying together. Mm-hmm. Now, we can get into the whole history of synods. They have certainly evolved very differently in the Western tradition than they have in the Eastern, where synods have a much more deliberative and legislative authority than they do and ever have in the West. In the West, we still had them. We think, for example, of the Synod of Whitby, and I think it's 664, that decisively moved the Church in England into the orbit of Rome and really changed the Church in England forever in a very good way. Mm-hmm. We have the Council of Trent that mandated that dioceses have the diocesan synod and called for regional and provincial synods. So we can see that synods are a part of the tradition, even of the West. Now, the institution that we most think of synods is the Synod of Bishops. It was established in 1965 by Pope St. Paul VI, coming out. He did it really at the very end of the Second Vatican Council. And the goal was to keep some of the elements of the council going forward. From the very beginning, the Synod of Bishops has been a consultative advisory body. It has, by tradition and by, if you can see, read it in Code of Canon Law, no authority. It is purely something that gives to the Pope its advice. Now, you have different types of synods, obviously, the ordinary, extraordinary, and special. But at the end of the day, they are a consultative body, and that's a point that's been made repeatedly here. So looking at all of that, then, what exactly do we mean by synodality? And Pope Francis has said it is, as he put it, a style. It is the people of God journeying together, listening, and accompanying. And I can vouch for the fact that having talked to many of the participants who've taken part here and read many of the documents and everything else and been at all the briefings, there's a lot of listening going on. So they are listening to each other. But we still have to understand the relationship between synodality and the church. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is where many of the anxieties are emerging.
Well, yeah, because we have this, we have a magisterium, which can't, yes. It's not a magisterium of just listening to people. It's a, you know, like,
right.
You can't have a normal human life without listening to other people. So I'm not denigrating that idea, but how does magisterium and synodality fit together? And maybe right. That's just a question that the synod has to answer, and we'll find out. I don't know.
Well, as you can imagine, that question, especially this week. So each of the weeks of the synod have been taken up with different aspects of synodality and the life of the church. Last week, we had a number of controversial issues. We had the discussions in the synod hall of LGBTQ, the question of the role of women in the life of the church. This week, which personally I consider to be the most important, not that these others aren't, but when we talk about synodality and when we talk about the life of the church, this third week where the synod is dealing with issues of co-responsibility structures, that's where I think many people are asking the question, okay, what is this relationship? Is synodality replacing authority? Is it unraveling authority? Is it decentralizing authority? If you'll allow me to quote something that was said at a press conference the other day by Archbishop Dabula Mpako of Pretoria, South Africa. He said that synodality must coexist with the hierarchical structure of the church. And he says, I don't think that is under any question. And he said, however, what we are probably wanting to see is how the two can work in such a way that synodality begins to infuse the way the hierarchical structure of the church operates. And that was something that was echoed by Cardinal Michael Czerny, who's the prefect for the Dicastery for Integral Human Development, who's had a pretty significant role in formulating the synod itself because his concern is so expansive. And he said the same thing, that it's that synodality is the goal is to inform and to help the church,
right.
I'm paraphrasing here, to be better as a church. So it's not a question of destroying hierarchy or replacing hierarchy or authority, but to help inform it. But again, that it's a hazy concept, and I understand why there's a lot of concern out there.
Well, would that be like here's where my struggle is. If it's centered on synodality, why the discussion of LGBTQ issues? Because that seems like that could be a synod of its own. Is it because we're asking how can we better listen to marginalized right. communities? Is that the idea?
Yeah, I mean that's the stated goal.
I got you. Okay.
Now the the question becomes, at what point do you stop listening and actually teach?
Oh, well, yeah, and, right.
A great question was asked by one of the participants, the Archbishop of Riga, Archbishop Stankevich. And he was asked pointedly about the LGBTQ question. And his answer was classical in a great way, restating the teachings of the church. You know, the catechism, of course, is very clear on this. And the treatment of homosexual persons, but at the same time being very clear in the church's teachings. And as he said, if you do not love properly, you're not loving at all. And part of loving is teaching.
Dr. Matthew Bunsen, our guest, right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
Why We're Catholic is the one book you can hand to anyone to invite them into or back to the Catholic faith. With more than 400,000 copies sold, Trent Horn's book has had a number one ranking on Amazon.com for 5 years running. Now available in softcover, bulk cases, ebook, and on Audible. Find out what the excitement is all about. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic at shop.catholic.com or visit whywearecatholic.com.
Is relativism dead? It sure seems dead. Each day, new moral demands are made and they are presented to us as absolutes. Everything from transgender ideology to physician-assisted suicide is presented as a moral good that all right-thinking people must accept. But Catholic Answers' own Carla Broussard says look deeper, and you will see today's moralism is just relativism dressed up in new clothes. Carla's eye-opening book, The New Relativism, shines a light on how the sacred moral teachings of this age cover up a deep denial of moral truth. Order your copy of The New Relativism today at shop.catholic.com and be prepared to defend the truth against aggressive relativism. The New Relativism at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It is turning out, I guess just because I'm really interested to hear what's going on in the Synod. It's hard to get clear news about the Synod because it's always right-wing and left-wing. And I know that that's not, I mean, there are right-wing people there, I'm sure, and left-wing people there. But that lens is so tired that I'm really glad to have this opportunity to talk with you about it. Because I just don't feel like that there's clear talk in many places. Now, I want to, having said that, I want to ask you a completely crass question before we go on to the callers. And I realize that this is a crass question, but we hear about all these new cardinals, and the problem is that they don't all know each other. The Pope is coming up on 90. I think he's 86 or 87.
He'll be 87 in actually some weeks.
Does a meeting like this start conversations in Rome about, hey, look at that guy. He might be the next one. And I realize that's a crass question, but I want to look behind the scenes at what goes on there.
That's a question that's actually been asked by quite a few analysts, what they call Vaticanista. So those are people who are sort of professional observers of the Vatican.
Yeah.
There's, I think, several pieces, for example, at Acistampa, which is one of EWTN News's agencies, digital agencies. So it's based here in Italy. And it's a question that's been asked in several other publications. Are these gatherings or gatherings like this an opportunity for some of the cardinals who are here to get to know each other? The answer is certainly yes. Pope Francis has not brought together the whole college very often. He did it, I think, in 2014, and then he did it again last year in August. for the consistory that took place then. He brought the cardinals together for about 3 days. Now, one of the criticisms at the time was reported about the cardinals was that they really didn't have much of an opportunity to spend time with each other. When they were basically being lectured about synodality. So part of the challenge that the going to have, and now the numbers have increased again by another 18 electors, is that you're absolutely right. They don't know each other very well. And so in the event of a conclave, there will inevitably be one. We don't know when. We have no idea. In fact, Pope Francis's health seems to be doing quite well at the moment. When they do meet, how are they going to get to know each other better? Well, within the conclave process, there are what are called general congregations in which all of the cardinals meet. They get to know each other. And then we'll have the lower key meetings of where they just gather in casual settings of meals and elsewhere, and then reach a consensus. It's been similar in many ways throughout the history of the church, where cardinals are fairly far flung. And only come together for a conclave. So you can imagine, for example, conclaves in the late 19th century, especially in the end of the 20th century, where they began having international cardinals, that it took you weeks on a ship to get to Italy.
Yeah.
And famously, there was the old belief, and it probably was proven true, that because they didn't really trust necessarily like the American cardinals, because they were considered such a young church, that they would start the conclave at the earliest possible date. Make so it much more difficult for the cardinals to arrive.
Yeah, that doesn't bother me. The other cardinals could do fine without the American cardinals, but
there's a famous story of some cardinals who arrived at, I think it was Civitavecchia or Ostia, and hired horses and galloped their way to the Vatican.
Oh, I hope we get that again. But I was thinking, Dr. Bunsen, more in the popular mind, are there figures who are kind of rising to the consciousness of the church in Rome and of the international church? They're going, hey, look at that guy has made some interesting interventions here.
This setting has certainly not bringing together the entire College of Cardinals. There's a large body of cardinals here, in part because some of them are in charge of it. Some of them, for example, Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York, was chosen by his peer bishops at the USCCB to represent the body as a whole.
Right.
But there are a number of American cardinals who aren't taking part. All of Francis's choices for the U.S. As cardinals are in attendance. But it is correct to say, however, that there is a large gathering of cardinals here. And certainly this is an opportunity for them to be heard, to take part. We've had a couple of cardinals participate in the press briefings, Cardinal Czerny being quite prominent among them. We also have some of the newer cardinals who are taking part. I think especially Cardinal Fernandez, Victor Manuel Fernandez, who's the new prefect for the dicastery for the doctrine of the faith, just appointed by Pope Francis, and of course is already weighing in in a number of controversial areas. I don't know if you've covered the dubia over the last couple of weeks.
Probably more than we should have.
Probably, I can imagine.
I don't know. It's hard to know.
Exactly. So he's certainly somebody who is not averse to talking and to getting into the scrum of ecclesiastical battles. So he has one of the higher profiles right now. And then there are a few others taking part in this gathering here, I think, who are seeing this, not in a crass political sense of raising their profile, but I think you see this as an opportunity to be heard.
I'm going to get some callers on here with you. Let's start with Walt in Westchester, Pennsylvania, listening on the EWTN app. Walt, thank you for your call. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Matthew Bunsen.
So I'm sorry. It sounds like you guys are kind of like running interference for what's going on at that place. I mean, the Pope has surrounded himself with some pretty dubious people like James Martin and Sister Jeanine Gramnik. Whoopi Goldberg, Paglia, who's the head of the Pontifical Academy for Life, seems to indicate that he thinks contraception is acceptable in circumstances. This is not good for our for the church. And then this so-called LGBT, which I don't think we should ever use those acronyms. That's given them kind of that attitude is acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So
I have to agree on one thing. I don't think Whoopi Goldberg should have anything to do with the Senate. But other than that, I will leave it up to Dr. Bunsen.
Yes.
I haven't even heard about that, but I don't want it. Whatever it is. Go ahead.
Well, happily, Whoopi Goldberg is not a voting member of the Senate of Bishops this time around. No, and I'm not making light in any way of the concerns of the caller. There is a lot of concern on the part of a lot of Catholics about what's happening here and about some of the events throughout this pontificate. The presence of James Martin, I know some people find to be very controversial because of his positions and because of the very high profile he has as an advocate for, forgive me for using the acronym, sir, LGBTQ. And we can also add that Sister Jeanine Gromick is also not an actual participant in the Synod. I think we need to make that distinction because she's not an actual member here. She did meet with Pope Francis this week, source of controversy. But it's emblematic, I think, of Pope Francis's outreach and, again, his vision for synodality and that listening to everybody. Now, that brings, as I think you and I, Psy, have been talking tonight, a lot of risk with it and a lot of anxiety to a lot of people. And I think those are playing out, interestingly enough, in the Synod Hall itself. That there is this discussion of the tensions that exist. Now, the way this Synod has been structured, there does not seem to be a great deal of vociferous disagreement among people. But there is certainly discussion, and we know from it's been confirmed at the press conferences that issues like the ordination of women, either to the diaconate or to the priesthood, that's been raised. And it's also important to note that there have been interventions from a number of people, including one from one of the women participants. There are 54 voting women here who expressed serious disagreement with those who are advocating this position, saying that this is a niche subject, basically, and that it is not helpful, nor what women in the church need or want. And from that standpoint, I think those voices are also being heard. And again, it's Francis's choice to let everyone be heard. At the end of the day, we keep receiving these assurances, and that's not running cover for the Synod. It's a simple statement of what the organizers of the Synod themselves have said, that the goal here is not to change church teaching. And that's what Francis has said, too. But clearly, when you have voices like this being heard, it does raise concerns on the part of a lot of people.
But I would go back, Walt, to what Dr. Bunsen said earlier about this the Synod on the Amazon, where the very similar anxieties were raised for very similar reasons. Mm-hmm. And what came out of that was not in any way really radical.
That's right. And we could see, we go again to Carita Amazonia. Now, if we go to the Synod on the Family, there were two of them, one in 2014 and one in 2015. The results of that were Pope Francis's exhortation Amoris Laetitia in 2016. That itself has been the source of a lot of controversy, in particular Chapter 8, and then with several footnotes have been much discussed and have actually elicited, and sorry for using the word again, dubia that were sent to Rome.
Right. I forgot that. Yeah.
For clarification, right. We had the unanswered dubia at the time. Now we have responses to two sets of dubia, one from the five different cardinals related to some of the issues that the Synod is grappling with right now. And then another set that were sent from the Czech bishops under the aegis of Cardinal Dominik Duka, the Archbishop Emeritus of Prague, that also elicited a response. That itself, that responsum, to use the technical term, has itself then caused more controversy. The responsum was drafted by Cardinal Fernandez and actually drew a response from one of the former prefects, one of his predecessors, Cardinal Gerhard Müller.
Yeah.
Raising a lot of concerns about the question of communion for the divorced and remarried Catholics who do not have an annulment, but who in some cases are forming their own consciences based on what they believe is the interpretation of Amoris Laetitia.
Walt, thank you very much for the call. We do have other calls, but I got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. But by the way, if you call now, we could probably get you on with Dr. Bunsen, whatever your question is about the church and the news. It's welcome. 888-318-7884.
There's only one. Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Proclaiming the faith, changing lives.
The year was 1981. The FCC license to operate a satellite earth station, the first ever given to an order of nuns, was granted to Our Lady of the Angels Monastery. Mother Angelica flips the switch and EWTN begins transmitting from Irondale, Alabama.
To learn more about Mother Angelica's life and the history of EWTN, visit EWTN.com/Mother Angelica.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I just got overwhelmed with curiosity about what Dr. Bunsen is experiencing in Rome during this time of the Synod, so I didn't go to any other news. But I'm going to be honest, I don't regret it. I'm learning a lot because it's really hard to get clarity on exactly what's happening. And the general sense I'm getting is there is tension in Rome. There is tension within the Synod. But the people in the Synod, they're getting their say. They're being allowed to make the interventions in the language of the church that they want to make, and that we're in a position now where we really don't know what's going to come from all of this. It's still quite a bit up in the air. Am I kind of summarizing correctly your take on it?
Yeah, I think you are. As we were mentioning in the start of our conversation tonight, that there will be a summary document that will be presented to them next week. Now, there's a certain opacity that has surrounded the process of its drafting, but the opacity will end come, I think, late Friday or into Saturday, when all the members of the Synod, all the participants, get this. It'll be read to them over at the course of some hours. It's not supposed to be especially long, but it's supposed to be, again, a summary document of all of these discussions. It's important to harp on the fact that this is the first phase of a two-part, two-phase synod that will conclude next year. That's important because we have, as we've been talking, months and months ahead of us. And I think that's where we're going to start to see with some clarity what exactly they mean by the implementation of synodality and what its impact, good or bad, is going to be on the structures in the church. We've had the discussions theologically, as I read one earlier from the Archbishop of Pretoria in South Africa and several other bishops and cardinals. That there's some danger to the structure of the church or the hierarchy of the church. That doesn't necessarily mean, however, that there is no grounds for concern on the part of a lot of people that some of these voices are calling for things that the church cannot change. For example, with the ordination of women to the priesthood, that is simply not the church is not empowered to do so. And in exactly the same way that it's the then Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith stipulated in 2021, that the church is not empowered to bless same-sex unions. Now, when we get into the technical details, for example, of the responsum from Cardinal Fernandez under the signature of Pope Francis and in their response to the five cardinals, the question relating to same-sex unions and everything else, it was pretty clear that Pope Francis also holds that basic position, that we can't do this. Now, is it possible to provide some kind of a blessing? Well, that's one of the questions I think that came out of this. But I think there's also an interesting, I want to go back to, I mentioned a little while ago, Archbishop Stankevich of Riga in Latvia. And he had, when asked about the LGBTQ question and same-sex blessings and everything else, I want to quote this because I thought it was beautifully said. He said, "We welcome with love and respect, but true love cannot be separated from truth, because if love is separated from truth, it is no longer love." And he said, if there is a person living in sin and we tell this person, everything is all right with you, it's okay, go ahead, we do harm, he said, because this person is in danger. When he dies, he will be in great danger. That's the type of teaching that many of the participants are advocating here. And I think that's important to state, that has been a perception in some corners, some of those podcasts you mentioned perhaps, that they're somehow they have stacked the deck here. And I think we have to be careful about making too many assumptions in exactly the same way, to go back to your question about the College of Cardinals. There's an assumption that somehow all the cardinals who've been appointed by Pope Francis are sort of progressives. I hate to use the term because it sounds very political, liberal, progressive, however you want to do that. But somehow that all of the cardinals that have been appointed by Pope Francis are eager to change the teachings of the church. I know from personal experience, because I know quite a number of them, that's simply not the case.
Yeah, I wonder if it even seems the case with Francis. It strikes me that a better way to describe him than to say he wants to change the teachings of the church is he does seem to want to change the way of being church. That he feels like that can be with that. So I think sometimes we put it on him as if, well, he clearly wants to change this or that teaching.
Right.
But what he's making clear is he wants to change the way we're doing it.
Yeah. And that's something that's been reiterated by a number of the cardinals and archbishops who've been at these press briefings over the last weeks, that it's not a question of changing the teachings of the church, but in some ways it's how we teach the teachings of the church, how we evangelize.
Yeah.
And one of the goals, stated goals at least, of the Synod is to help the way that we evangelize. Again, I understand that it is alarming to have people apparently standing up and openly advocating for the ordination of women to the priesthood. But Francis himself has said that it is not the intention of the Synod to change church teaching. And we take Pope Francis at his word, especially because we have seen over the last decade that isn't something he's done.
Yeah.
And he's willing to take the risk of having everyone heard, as we've been saying tonight. But at the same time, he very clearly is able and has reiterated church teaching. In relation, for example, to the question of the ordination of women, he has said very publicly on planes and everywhere else that, as he put it, that is a closed door.
Yeah.
And he has specifically referenced Ordinatio Sacerdotalis and a lot of other documents and other teachings about the ordination of women. He's defended it even in, I think it was the Disney documentary where he met with some young people and talked about that. There are those who have claimed erroneously that Pope Francis is somehow demoted or is not interested in the topic of abortion, yet he has used some of the most vivid images. He talks about hiring a hitman, for example. So Francis's style is something. And I go back to that phrase that he used for synodality, where he describes it as a style for the church.
I want to get a caller on with you. Steve is in Napomo, California, watching on YouTube. Steve, go ahead with your question for Dr. Matthew Bunsen.
Yeah, first, thank you, Cy, for your book, Teacher of Strange Things. I haven't thanked you. My question for you, Doctor. Go ahead, Cy.
No, I just wanted to say thank you. That was very nice of you. Go ahead.
No, thank you, guys. Doctor Bunsen, are you aware of the Jerome Biblical Commentary for the 21st Century? Francis is forward and an imprimatur.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I have not actually seen the book myself, so I can't really comment on what they mean by giving it an imprimatur. We don't actually see, unfortunately, a lot of books these days with the Nihil Obstat imprimatur in them. I wish we had more censors liberorum.
But did you have a problem with the Bible, Steve, or with the commentary?
No, it's Romans 1:27. It says, "Don't use to denigrate homosexual acts." And Romans 1:27. And understand that.
It says homosexual acts.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay.
You don't use Romans 1:27 to denigrate homosexual acts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, I can't really comment at this point because I have not seen it myself. I've read a few accounts about it, but I try to reserve judgment on these things until I actually have a chance to investigate and read it for myself.
Thanks, Steve. That's what the best we'll have to do. Darren, let's not have Dr. Bunsen on until he's read everything, okay? I don't know. why do we have him on if he hasn't read everything?
That's well, ridiculous. It'll be a long time then.
I am very grateful for you staying up in the middle of the night there in Rome. I just want to get a sense of the feeling in Rome. You've been there many times. Does it feel different when this is going on? Does it feel like the city itself feel different?
Well, one of the beauties of Rome is that because it is so old, they have seen many an interesting event. including from the fall of the sack of Rome in 410 and 455 and then in 1527. So I don't think that there's a feeling at this point that Rome is about to be sacked. But I will say that one of the most interesting things coming now, this is my third trip in just a couple of months, is how vigorous and active the pilgrims are here. And it's maybe a hopeful way to finish up our conversation tonight.
Yeah.
But the lines, for example, at the Vatican Museum, the lines to get into St. Peter's are immense. And I think there's a real happiness on the part of the Romans from those I've talked to that the pilgrims are back post-COVID. And this is a city and a country that were especially hard hit by COVID. Many businesses and restaurants that I'm familiar with over the years did not survive COVID. And pilgrims being back, but it also I think says something about the desire, especially post-COVID, for people to make these religious, these spiritual journeys, these pilgrimages to Rome. And I think it's a heartening thing that what's happening in the Synod Hall is one thing. It's certainly going to have a great impact on the life of the church in years to come. But at the same time, outside of the hall, we have crises in the world, but we still have people who want to come to Rome as an act of faith and to see St. Peter's. And that's a remarkable thing.
I'm so glad that you made that point because in a certain sense, those pilgrims are a metaphor for the whole church. And she has many people who are on that pilgrimage with sincerity and with integrity. And these crises, they come and go. The upsets come and go. Probably the podcasters don't come and go. I think they're permanent now. But but I'm glad that you. I am grateful that you end on that note of hope because people get worried, upset, and there are reasons to be worried, upset sometimes. But the pilgrimage continues. We're all on this on the way to the house of the Father, and
we are. And as a last line, Archbishop Anthony Fisher of Sydney made the great observation that if a synod proposal is at odds with the gospel, that's not of the Holy Spirit.
Oh, praise God for him. We were just in Sydney, and we weren't in Sydney. We were in Perth, we missed him.
He's a fantastic archbishop. Yes.
He is a fantastic archbishop. And you are a fantastic guest, Dr. Matthew Bunsen. Thank you so much for staying up till the middle of the night, eating your pasta late to be with us.
A privilege to be with you, really is.
I will see you next time, God willing, right here, Catholic Answers Live.